number one, in any context, stop assuming, and I'm speaking to myself here too, stop assuming that your perspective is that of the whole world's. It's not. People are in different places, have different motivations. And specifically to the context of land, I would say 90% of our deals come not from motivated sellers, but from very unmotivated sellers who don't want to deal with it and who have plenty of money and their time is very important to them.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you for joining us today. This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. As always, I am your host, Taylor Lode. I'm a multifamily and self-storage real estate investor. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Dan Haberkost. Dan is a land investor who started his real estate investing journey at the age of 21, starting out pretty young. And today he's focusing on interesting land deals that he's doing from a distance, building his teams, his systems, and his business in such a way that enables him to, once again, do deals from a distance and to step away and sometimes take vacations out of the country for a few weeks at a time. Pretty incredible. Today, we're going to dig into his journey, how his business model works in the land investment business, his thoughts on the market today, and so much more. Dan, thanks so much for joining us today. Can you tell us where you're calling from? And then interestingly, where you do deals these days, the states where you're doing deals.
Yeah, absolutely. Taylor, thanks for having me on the show, first of all. And so I live in Colorado Springs, do a lot of our deals in the Carolinas and Florida, some in Arizona, New Mexico, all over the place, but the Southeast has really been the most productive for us recently.
Okay, great. Before we dig into how you're able to do deals from a distance, let's dig a bit into the actual business models that you're pursuing today, because I think when folks hear land investing, sometimes the temptation is to think just buy a piece of land and sit on it and pay the taxes until it appreciates, but that's not so much a business as it is speculation, right? So what is your specific model as you invest in land and improve it and make returns?
Sure. So, you know, honestly, Taylor, land investing is somewhat of a misnomer a lot of the time because it's simply wholesale to retail oftentimes, not always, but we have a giant marketing funnel going direct to seller for land all over the country. And we'll buy it from 30 to 70 cents on the dollar, depending on what we're intending to do with it. Some of it, we just turn around and resell. Sometimes small improvements from clearing some trees, doing a perk test, assembling a couple lots, doing a minor subdivision, stuff like that can add a lot of value. And then I guess technically you can call that investing. And then I always do some new construction as well. The Southeast stuff is all the simpler transactions. I've only ever done new construction in Colorado, where I can more have my finger on the pulse here where I live. And so that's Front Range land. That's my active business. And that's really just the means of generating cash, of creating income, so that I can then go and continually buy more rental properties. And just about all my rental properties are here in Colorado, closing on another fourplex here in February. So two buckets, active and passive, and Front Range land is the active business. And it all starts with getting land under contract substantially under market value.
Great. Okay. From a distance, you're looking at land in the Southeast, Florida, Carolinas, wherever, and you want to acquire it under fair market value. But how do you go into that kind of equation and feel that you have the ability or the knowledge to be able to assess what is the fair market value in this piece of land that is 1,000, whatever, miles from me that I can't just go see and figure out? How do you approach that problem of determining fair market value and what kind of discount you're going to get?
So let me make a further distinction here that is lost on a lot of people who don't have experience with land. When people conflate raw land and developed land all the time, I hear people refer to developed land as raw land. And so guys, what we're talking about, you know, I'm sitting here in Colorado Springs, out to the east of the city, you get past, there's a couple small cities, but you get past those and you just have endless farmland, right? With no roads, no utilities. It's just zoned ag. That is raw land. Whereas these markets that I'm targeting, you're dealing with subdivisions where the land has been horizontally developed. There's streets, there's roads, there's utilities. Most of the time, it's entitled for various uses depending on the specific zoning, right? All that work's been done, which is a tremendous amount of time, headache, and capital to take raw land and turn it to that finished shovel-ready stage. Okay. And so that is what I focus on. So that distinction is really important because those are two totally different products. Now, given that, the land I'm targeting is much easier to comp when you're in a subdivision where there's thousands of lots, right? There's many other examples. And it's not a perfect distinction, right? We have acreage we're going after or acreage that's right at the edge of the subdivision that could be subdivided, right? But I'm avoiding the totally raw land that many people target and that takes a long time, oftentimes, depends on the municipality and the specific variables, but it takes a long time to get to the point of being ready to be built on. Okay. So that's the first point I want to make. Now, we rely heavily on local experts to help us. Absolutely. We're marketing pretty heavily to Tucson right now because we're looking to get some properties to do subdivision, small subdivides. And you need a local expert for the more complex deals because the norms from one part of the country to another vary tremendously, right? And so an easy example of this would be North Carolina. Every deal that I sell, we get non-refundable earnest money from retail buyers. In fact, it is on their standard contract and they refer to it as a due diligence fee. You don't put anything under contract unless you're putting up non-refundable earnest. They mail a check right to me. Now, if I try and get that from retail buyers in most markets, that's not going to fly. That's just one example. But all that to say, we find local realtors who are selling a lot of land to help us, and then we list with them. And that helps us do this from wherever we are at the time. So that's important.
Okay. So that then begs the question of, you gave some descriptions of the types of parcels that you would go after, but digging a little bit deeper, why would the current owners be willing to sell you their property at a discount if it's could be redeveloped or re-entitled or improved in some way, especially from a distance? What's in it for them?
Sure. In any business, there's wholesale to retail. I'll give you an example from my personal life. I was talking to my parents a couple of weeks ago. They were buying a new truck. They're retired. They're in their mid-60s. And they had a Subaru that was only a couple years old. It was very nice. And they said they were trading it in. And I go, Dad, what are you doing? You can go sell this substantially higher on Craigslist or Facebook or wherever. He goes, we're tired. We've pinched and scrounged and saved our whole life. We just want it to be easy. We know they're going to turn around and flip it. That's fine. And that is who sells land at a discount. It is very rarely distress. I'm actually doing a whole talk on this at my real estate group next week. And one of my big takeaways for everybody who's doing this is don't assume your perspective is that of everybody else's. We buy from upper middle class to wealthy, older people who are apathetic about money because they have plenty of money and just want ease of transaction. We bought a lot for 20 grand that he had bought for 200 grand because he knew it wasn't worth what he had bought it for initially. And it gave him a nice write-off because he made a lot of money elsewhere. So number one, in any context, stop assuming, and I'm speaking to myself here too, stop assuming that your perspective is that of the whole world's. It's not. People are in different places, have different motivations. And specifically to the context of land, I would say 90% of our deals come not from motivated sellers, but from very unmotivated sellers who don't want to deal with it and who have plenty of money and their time is very important to them. You know, I just got a tag in our CRM for one of my acquisition managers, and we bought a deal from a big land company in Florida that bought hundreds of lots years ago at 3, 5, 10 cents on the dollar. And so we got a great deal from them, and we're probably going to get more. Why? Again, because they bought it at nothing. They have lots of money and we made it easy for them. That tends to be the seller avatar. Occasionally we run into distress, but not often.
Okay. So folks want an easy transaction, and it sounds like there's you said they're unmotivated, but as far as moving from a prospect, somebody that's maybe called back on a mailer or something like that, express some interest, taking them to a close, if they're not particularly motivated, I can see that maybe you're running a risk of having a high dropout rate, essentially, where folks say, whatever, I'll call Dan back, and then they forget about it for a year or what have you. So what's that rate look like? How do you not push, but how do you push a deal from like initial interest to a close with an unmotivated seller?
Sure. With us, I'm trying to bookmark all the things I'm thinking in response to what you just said. Number one, because I'm bad at this and I have acquisition managers, I don't talk to sellers really anymore, is building rapport. because then you can have a more honest conversation with people. They like you. You can push them a little harder. And so my best acquisition manager I've ever had, I'd look at his calls and call rail, and they were 20 to 45 minutes all the time. Once he had an idea that, hey, this is our seller, he'd really get to know them. And then he could say, pretending I'm talking to you, Taylor, you've owned this for 20 years. You're never going to use it. Quit paying these property taxes. Let us buy this and go put the money to work elsewhere. And that's also what our postcard says. So as a corollary to this whole conversation, we're really intentional about our marketing not matching everybody else's. And so we're not talking about a quick cash close because they rarely care. We're focused on legitimacy. And right on our postcard, it's a big 6x9, the one that's really been productive. It says, are you planning to build on your land? If not, let us buy it and put your money to work elsewhere. And so a lot of times it gets people and they're like, ugh, yeah, I guess I'm still paying HOA fees and taxes. I'm wasting my money. Let me just get rid of this thing. And so then once we're in contact with them, legitimacy is at the top of the list for getting deals because let's face it, real estate investing has been popularized by all these different podcasts in recent years, plus just the huge run up in prices, right? Suddenly it's exciting. So there's all these people sending out mailers, calling, texting, trying to buy land at a discount that don't have any money, that can't close, that don't know anything about land, let alone real estate in general. And so differentiating ourselves from them has been the number one reason we have gotten deals. And we are doing dozens and dozens of deals at a time. I just signed up for the Better Business Bureau so I could put that logo on our postcard because I can't tell you how many closed deals we have gotten solely because they trusted that we could close. Like we sent proof of funds. We mentioned that on our postcard. And because we introduced them to our title company or attorney, depending on the state. So I know I threw a lot at you there, but let me pause. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And the note about the Better Business Bureau, adding that, I can expect that would probably make a really big difference because you mentioned that you're mostly dealing with older, wealthier folks who tend to put a lot of stock in something like the Better Business Bureau, which for all its great things, it's not like a government entity like a lot of folks think. They name themselves very well. So it's a pretty smart marketing move. And they do get reviews and everything like that. So it does add real legitimacy there as well.
Yeah. So that's a big thing. I'll tell you, I've gotten endless postcards for lots that I own. And I have a friend who I mentioned I'm in business with, and he can relate where we've both tried to call some of these back on some of the lots that we've had sitting. Neither of us have ever gotten a response on any of them. The amount of people sending postcards and land offer letters that don't even call their leads back, the bar is so low, Taylor. So it is competitive, but I like competitive markets because that's where we can set ourselves apart and get deals.
So let's talk a bit about the back end side of things and how long once you've closed on an acquisition, you're typically sitting on a property until you're able to dispose of it in some way. What's your typical hold period look like?
So I think of this on a spectrum. So we have an SOP for this as far as price to offer, where there are some markets like a lot of Florida, because we're all over Florida, where we can sell stuff a few days on market and then a 15 to 30 day contract. Whereas there are parts of the Carolinas, like that one I bought for 20 where he had bought it for 200, that'll probably take 3, 4, 5 months to sell. And so all that to say, on the ones that I'm expecting to take 90 or 180 days to sell, we want to buy those more like 30 to 45 cents on the dollar. And then going into some of these Florida markets where they're borderline liquid, we'll pay 60, 65 cents on the dollar if we need to, because again, we sell them so quickly. And there's a number of markets where we've just done dozens and dozens of transactions. So we know street by street, we know all the realtors, we know when we can move. And so those will go much higher cents on the dollar. So I think the longest I've ever sat on a land deal was right around a year, like almost exactly a year, barring some of the builds I've done. But yeah, most of the stuff will move within the first 30 to 90 days.
Okay. So you threw out a few numbers there in terms of cents on the dollar, negotiating a price with a seller, right? Depends on the situation, where it is, everything like that. How do you formulate those offers to, you know, get a price that you find acceptable and maybe also plan for seller to push back, want to negotiate, try to split the difference, to refer to one of the books over my shoulder here, How do you plan those offers so that you have an appropriate hit rate and everybody's going to walk away satisfied at the end of the day?
Sure. So first and foremost, we're not sending land offer letters, in case that's unclear to anyone. We send neutral mailers and cold and so on and so forth, and then discuss. Number two, going upstream a little bit, first and foremost, my acquisition people know that the first thing they need to do is feel out, is this our seller avatar or not? I referenced doing that presentation at my real estate group next week, and I'm talking about 2024, what's working as far as direct to seller marketing and negotiation. And I really want to drive the point home that you don't start negotiating until you know you're talking to your seller avatar. You're just beating your head against the wall if you don't determine that or try to, right? There's plenty of people where we just say, oh, Taylor, man, we'll just send you to our realtor. We're investors. We're looking to buy a good deal. Great. That is one of my favorite ways to determine, because they might just say, oh, great. Yeah, please do. Then, okay, no harm, no foul. You're not our seller. Go sell. We'll give a referral to one of our realtors. Or they might go, no, okay, what can you pay? And so first and foremost, always feel them out. Is this your seller or is this someone that's not worth your time? Okay. Then from there, I always try and get them to throw out a number first. And we'll ask several different ways. And then if they absolutely refuse, then we'll start a decent 5-ish, maybe 10% below what we can actually pay. So there's a little bit room to negotiate, because oftentimes you have to negotiate some just to satisfy the ego, right? If they feel like, I see this all the time. And so we try not to start with our highest and best. We'll start a little bit lower and then see if we can get them to come close to us, at least where we can make a agreement.
Okay. So I like that one. And well, I like all of that, but where you're referring folks to one of your realtor contacts, you're still helping them solve their problem or mm-hmm. sending them down the path. And on the realtor side of things, you're getting some bonus credit, if you will, from your reputation with the realtor, because you're sending them potential leads and potential listings that they can still make some money, even if you didn't transact the deal yourself. You're just referring that business off.
But Taylor, really what that is, most of the time, it's a takeaway. It's a form of a takeaway where you're shifting the power dynamic of the conversation. And more often than not, they don't want to sell with a realtor. And we know that. But it's the way of someone comes in too hot, too aggressive. Maybe they're unpleasant, or maybe they're just asking for a huge number. I teach my people this, right? You need to do some form of a takeaway. No worries. Doesn't sound like we're your buyer. Here's our realtor. And a lot of times we know what they're going to say, but it's really just a means of shifting the conversation. It's the same way on the dispo side. I got an offer yesterday. My realtor called me. He says, we got this offer. And it was way too low. So our response was, no thanks. No counter. Nothing. And this is all, guys, I know this. I can joke about this, but this really is important. You really are playing a game. And it's about shifting power dynamics, and ego comes into this so much, but it's so important to hold the power in the conversation. And so really that referral to the realtor often is a way just to shift the dynamic.
Wow. Okay. I like that. And I like that you don't respond to offer. You just say no thanks. Sometimes you don't counter.
No.
You just retain that power. So I like that. So the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, we're all about helping our listeners learn how to build wealth with real estate without buying themselves another job. And I've seen a lot of folks who get into the land business and don't build it as a business, don't build teams and systems, and wind up getting burned out, because especially getting started in any real estate business that's on the active side, it's a lot of work mm-hmm. when you're getting going. And you mentioned a few key things in this conversation that are part of or the entirety of building a business, as you've done. You've mentioned SOPs, you mentioned several different types of team members that are on your team. So let's talk a bit about how you've built this business so that you can, after in a couple of weeks, as I understand, after we're done talking, you're going to go take a 2-week vacation in Japan, which how many people can step away from their business for 2 weeks? So how have you built the teams and systems so that this business runs when you're not present?
Sure. Transparency here. I'll have to do some stuff while I'm in Japan. I'll have to respond to things, and I'm sure. So it's not like it's 100% passive, but I can certainly go anywhere. I spent a couple months in California last year. So starting at square one, you need to learn it yourself first. So you do need to go through it yourself first. You need to do the acquisitions. Now, I think I did 30 or 40 deals before hiring anyone, because if you don't have an understanding of the whole process, you can't properly hire and fire and so on and so forth. So do it yourself at first. And then as you get through it, it becomes simple. You know what you're doing. And along the way, as you're doing those deals, start creating your SOPs, your standard operating procedures. We have a sheet with every contact of realtors, title companies, soil testing companies, so on and so forth, in every market we're in. We have a sheet of every website, from the GIS to maybe the utility maps to the soil, whatever might be specific to that city or county. It's endless. We have SOPs about what to offer in what market. We have market-specific due diligence where, hey, watch out for this specifically in this market. So start recording everything so that when you do go to hire, when you do go to offload, they have what's up here on paper, so they don't have to come to you for every single thing, right? So I have a whole categorized SOP sheet that I had a new acquisition manager start on Monday, and there is a list of which videos to start with day one, right? And so that's one thing. Number two, in this business specifically, a good title company or attorney, depending on the state, is so important. Where in Florida and North Carolina, where we do most of our business, South Carolina now too, the title companies we have, they serve as transaction coordinators. It's amazing. Where once we send the contract in on the acquisition side and CC the seller plus title or attorney on the email, they take it from there. They reach out, they hold their hand, they set up dates, and it just further legitimizes the whole thing in the seller's head. So you've got to look around, because I've dealt with so many awful title companies. I could tell you stories about that, but finding a good one is invaluable. And same with the realtor on the dispo side. Again, speaking specifically to my business, then on the sales side, they handle all the transaction coordination and really make it far more passive for you. So the major thing in my business that requires skill is simply the acquisitions. And so the majority of my time goes to helping them, continually training them. It's never, no, not never. It's often not black and white, and they do need a second set of eyes, or, hey, am I good to offer this? And so I'm double checking things, absolutely. But I'll stop there and summarize with good people and good systems is the key, as with any business.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So can you tell us about that first hire you made, maybe? Because that's, in my experience, the one where we learn the most important and the toughest lesson. So what was the first situation where you hired someone?
Yeah, I hired an acquisition manager. I believe I found her off a paid Indeed ad. And man, she was great, all things considered, knowing how poor my SOPs were 3 years ago, because this was 2021, about 3 years ago. But yeah, learned a lot. It creates some self-awareness, because I'm bad about recognition, about saying good job. I'm bad about just expecting people to be similar to me, which if they're similar to me, they're not going to be a good employee, and not giving them enough feedback, not seeming approachable as far as if they have questions. And so I did a lot of things wrong, absolutely. And she stayed with me for about a year. But yeah, I'm continually working on getting better at hiring, and I'm optimistic about the acquisition manager I had to start Monday. I think she's the ideal sort of candidate, and I've worked to do better on the things where I fall short with her. I think that'll go well. And then the other full-time acquisition guy I have, that's been good, but I am concerned that he probably isn't a long-term employee. He's a little too motivated to speak.
Fair enough. Yeah, that makes sense. So as far as finding people in general, I think businesses across the country for the last few years have had a hard time staying staffed and keeping people. Sounds like things are reasonably working out for you now, although you may have to find another acquisitions guy, because your acquisitions guy right now is a little too good.
Yeah.
But how's that process gone in finding new people, in terms of like finding your most recent person? Was that a long search, and how did you like make that happen effectively?
Sure. So again, guys, I don't know. I don't have all the answers here. I'm certainly still learning and getting better. And this is where I thought about this the other day, the way that, for example, he's producing, because I had to let go of the girl that the new one's replacing. I could hire infinity acquisition managers if they're that good, if they're even close to producing at the level he is. I don't care. The payroll doesn't mean anything compared to what he's making. And so that's one of the biggest bottlenecks for me to expand the business. But all that to say, he ultimately was a referral from a friend I got to know him about a year and a half ago, and he approached me late last year about doing acquisitions. And then the girl that started Monday, believe it or not, she had built her own wholesaling business here locally, and I bought one of my rentals from her in 2020. However, her and her husband decided to have kids. Her husband makes plenty of money, so she closed up shop. And now years later, kids are off at preschool. She wants to do something again, but doesn't want to build her own business. And I thought, wow, if she can start a single family home wholesaling business, that is far more challenging. She can certainly serve as acquisition manager. And she's doing that for me now. And I'm optimistic there, definitely.
Wow. So working through your network really sounds to be pretty effective there. So you're a young guy, you're 27, having all this success building not only your land business, but your passive income portfolio there near you with your rentals. What does the kind of, for want of a better term, what does the end game look like for you? Because I think a lot of folks out there are a good few years older than you and thinking, wow, if I was only 27, what would I be doing? What does the end game look like for you?
It's funny. So I think about this a lot. And I, especially the other day, this was on my mind because I created the scenario that I set out to create when I started my business. But this is one reason why I like listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast. I don't know if you ever listened or if any of your listeners do, because he interviews people who are at the absolute top of whatever it is that they do, from music to business to politics to art, anything at all. And something that was so clear to me from listening to that, because I've been listening to his show for years, at least, you know, some of the episodes, is that there's no moment where you make it, right? It's more about continually working and growing, a continual pursuit of a goal. And so I don't have some, hey, this is the number where I'm set and I don't have to do anything, because that sucks. I like working. I like using my brain. I'm never just going to sit around and do nothing. I just spent a couple weeks traveling, went and snowboarded in Park City and saw some family in Phoenix. I like working and traveling. I don't want to sit around. That sounds terrible. And so I'll always be putting my mind to something. So I don't have a clear answer for you. I'm building Front Range land continually. As a corollary to that, my buddy Mason and I, that I mentioned earlier, just launched Ground Up Partners, where we're partnering with land investors and providing the capital for land deals and continually buying and building more rental properties. I don't have a clear answer for you. I'm having fun. And more than anything, I, as opposed to being focused on a specific end goal and focused on just doing the things that I have fun with, like this, the rental that I'm closing on in February, the fourplex, it's a much newer build, great area, very stable. I'm building some new construction that I'm just going to keep. I don't want to touch distressed real estate ever, unless it's like, you know, on Mission Beach or, you know, prime location, right? I want new vintage, nice turnkey. And then I put my time and effort into the things I enjoy. So that's probably the biggest change, where I don't necessarily need anything. So I'm just focusing on the aspects of business that I enjoy.
Nice. I love that. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor.
Are you looking for a way to easily track your rental property finances? Check out Stessa. Stessa makes managing real estate investments simple. You can easily keep track of the performance, finances, and the paper trail of your rental properties. Our listeners can get started for free and then upgrade at any time to unlock their more advanced tools. And the even better news is that the upgrade is very affordable and will not break your bank. Smart investors know that tracking the numbers, tracking the money, tracking the finances is what really drives your success. Check out Stessa. It'll make your property finances easier. Just go to escapingwallstreet.com, scroll down to the Stessa logo, and get started for free. Now back to the show.
All right, Dan, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, number one, what's your number one book recommendation?
Sapiens. Yuval
Noah Harari.
Yeah. I think I've read that 3 or 4 times.
Nice. Interesting one. I don't think anybody's recommended that one before on the show, but
I don't think I remember a single business book I've ever read. If I'm being honest. If I'm being totally honest, I don't read business books really. I find history, science, and combinations of the two to be useful.
Nice. Question number two, who or what inspires you?
I have a older friend who taught me much of what I know. And I think he's been a big source of inspiration for me, definitely.
Nice. Yeah, looking to others that are further along than us is very helpful. Question number three, think about Dan at 80 years old. If you could take some time to speak with 80-year-old Dan, What advice, feedback, or guidance do you think 80-year-old Dan would give Dan of today?
Business should never be the first priority. People should don't forget to plant the long-term seeds amongst all the short-term profits. You know, I think of many of the most important things I've done that are paying off exponentially today. They weren't especially useful up front and required a lot of upfront effort, but now are really paying off. And so keeping that top of mind in how I invest in myself as far as skills, as far as relationships, I think is really important. And probably just to relax. It's just a game, really, at the end of the day. So those are the initial things that come to mind.
Nice. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing this knowledge about how you've built your land business so you can take a vacation in Hawaii, or excuse me, so you can take a vacation in Japan. Why am I thinking Hawaii? I just went to Hawaii a few months ago. And live your dreams, make money at the same time. If folks want to reach out and get in touch, where can they track you down?
Yeah, Dan Haber on the danhaberkost.com or on any socials. And then The Big Picture Blueprint is the podcast my buddy and I host.
Great. Thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.